Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my great privilege to serve this very, very loving congregation. Everyone's welcome here. You're welcome here no matter who you are and how you feel. You're welcome whether this is your very first time or you've been coming for 50 years. You're welcome whether it was hard to make your way into the sanctuary this morning or if you were running full force. You're welcome whether you love crisp winter temperatures or if you're wondering where Portland's 50-degree winters went. Everyone's welcome because that is foundational to our faith. In our faith, we believe that every single person has inherent worth and dignity, and every person matters. This morning, I have really exciting news for you. We now have a new administrator. Her name is Jen Fife Adams, and I thought she was here. Is she here? She's here. Hello, everyone. There she is. She's amazing. And Pat has been training her in the background, so that's really good because we're trying to do like a mind send over to Jen, which is going to be a thing. So we ask everyone to be very kind and very gentle and very sweet and introduce yourselves. She really is wanting to get to know people in our congregation. So the other big news is that I'm going on sabbatical. I think if you've been around, you received a letter about that. I'm going to be gone for 5 weeks. I was going to start tomorrow, but that isn't going to happen due to my to-do list. But on Tuesday, I'm pretty sure it will. And so you are going to be under great, great care. We have many people in the background. We're going to make sure everything goes well. We have a couple of people doing pastoral care. We have great services planned. There's plans for emergencies, so you all are going to be well. And I'm going to be well, too. I'm going to spend half the time in Australia visiting with my brand-new granddaughter. So. And when I come back, it'll be so good to be with you again, because I love you dearly. So if you're new today, I want to ask you to fill out our membership cards, which are in the back of your seats, and you can turn them in. Then you can get our e-blast and get more information about us. So we also have coffee downstairs and online. Light this flame this morning for our living tradition of Unitarian Universalism. This flame burns like our hearts and spirits and mind, always seeking and learning better ways to be an inclusive, loving, interconnected beings. Let us say our affirmation together. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious.
Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him. And so glad to see everybody this morning. And please join me in our opening reading. This is an excerpt from Things Believed Among Us, written in 1887 by William Channing Gannett, to describe the center of Unitarianism at that time. It passed the Western Unitarian Conference. We believe that to love the good and to live the good is the supreme thing in religion. We hold reason and conscience to be final authorities in matters of religious belief. We revere Jesus and all holy souls that have taught men truth and righteousness and love as prophets of religion. We trust the unfolding universe as beautiful, beneficent, unchanging order. To know this order is truth. To obey it is right and liberty and stronger life. We believe that we ought to join hands and work to make the good things better and the worst good, counting nothing good for self that is not good for all. We worship one in all, that life whence suns and stars derive their orbits, and the soul of man its ought, that light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world, giving us power to become the sons of God, that love with which our souls commune. This is the time in our service when we pause to bring to our awareness what we are grateful for. And gratitude reminds us just how utterly dependent we are on each other and on the world. So I invite you now just to take a moment to consider what you are grateful for today. As we reflect on the center of our faith and what Unitarian Universalism means to us, I feel blessed to be part of this community, to be with all of you here today. And I'm grateful to know that we're not alone on this journey of seeking meaning, of building a just and peaceful world, and living in covenant and compassion with each other. This is the time of the service when we think about the value of this community in our lives, to consider what we have been given and what we want to give in return. All of our contributions, whether through offering our time or our energy, our talents, our resources, they're all a tangible commitment to the mission and vision of who we are in this congregation. And each time we give, we renew this commitment. And as a result, our support is entwined with all that we believe and all that we do here together. This is a special gift for today and for all the generations that will follow us. And this spirit of trust and generosity will now gratefully accept the offering. Thank you. Please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity.
There is so much happiness in this world, goodness, love, beauty, that grows within us and all around us. Together we create a circle of celebration, deep enough to hold all the joy in our lives. There's also so much pain in the world. Each of us knows loss and suffering. Together here we create a circle of compassion, wide enough to hold all the sorrow in our lives. We will now take a moment of silent reflection, and when the music begins, come forward if you are so called, and place a stone in the bowl of water. The water is the community of compassion that bears all sorrows, and water is the community of celebration that shares such joys. And I ask that if you do come up, walk up this aisle and come back down this aisle, so we don't have traffic jams. I'd like to begin this morning by placing a stone for Tyre Nichols. And I'm going to place another stone for all the beloved, dear, young, black men who are killed by state violence. It is not enough. I would just like these stones to hold our compassion and our grief, and hopefully inspire us to commitment to end such horror. We will come out with the hymn Comfort Me. It's 1002 in your teal hymnals, but the words will be on the screen. I would like to offer this words for meditation, reflection, and prayer. Mantra to overcome depression. Vitamin D, sunlight. Go outside, get a good night's sleep, not too good. Not shades drawn forever good. not like you used to. Open the windows, buy more houseplants, breathe, meditate. One day, you will no longer be afraid of being alone with your thoughts. Exercise. Actually exercise instead of just Googling it. Eat well. Cook for yourself. Organize your closet, the garage. Drink plenty of water and repeat after me. I am not a problem. To be solved. Repeat after me. I am worthy. I am worthy. I am neither the mistake nor the punishment. Forget to take the vitamins. Let the houseplants die. Eat spoonfuls of peanut butter. Shave your head. Forget this poem. It doesn't matter. There is no wrong way to remember the grace of your own body. No choice that can unmake itself. There is only now. Here, look. You are already forgiven. Let us just take a moment in silence for prayer, meditation, and reflection, as is your tradition.
Almost forgot. There's a part in this next piece for you to sing along with, and the key words are repeat after me. And the sopranos and altos will show you what to do.
Vitamin D.
That was so good. Thank you. I'm going to let my houseplants die. So this reading is referring to our graphic on the screen. And this is an excerpt from the proposed revision to Unitarian Universalist Principles and Sources. Love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. We are accountable to one another for doing the work of living our shared values through the spiritual discipline of love. Inseparable from one another, these shared values include interdependence. We honor the interdependent web of all existence. Pluralism. We celebrate that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. Justice. We work to be diverse, multicultural, beloved communities where all thrive. Transformation. We adapt to the changing world. Generosity. We cultivate a spirit of gratitude and hope. And equity. We declare that every person has the right to flourish with inherent dignity and worthiness.
I'm personally going to be eating those big spoonfuls of peanut butter while Googling exercise. So Unitarian Universalist and Unitarian Universalist have been attempting to articulate who we are and what is central to our faith as long as we have existed. And it's pretty tricky. Most, but not all, there's nothing you can say about all, Christian faiths have a practice of naming what they consider to be right belief through a creed or a confession of faith. If some of you do not believe correctly, if some people who come don't believe correctly, they may be asked to leave. Arguments over correct belief have fractured Christianity from the very, very beginning. And today, across the world, the tradition has split into 45,000 different ways of understanding and practicing Christianity. Much, if not all of this, it's not the only reason there's been so many fractures within Christianity, but a major reason for the fractures is different ideas about what the correct belief is for Christianity. So one of the most well-known Christian creeds is the Nicene Creed, which was written in the 4th century AD, and it's recited today in Catholic, Episcopal, and many other Christian churches. And it begins, and some of this will be very familiar and hopefully not triggering. It says, "We believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, all that is seen and unseen. We believe in one Lord, Jesus Christ, the only Son of God, eternally begotten of the Father, from God from God, light from light, true God from true God, begotten, not made, of one being with the Father." To most of us, that last bit is almost incomprehensible. Begotten, not made, of one being with the Father. What? Why are we saying this? So back in the 4th century, however, fighting over that very sentence was the deadly battle. The theological at the time was whether Jesus was of the same substance of God, or whether God created Jesus, just like God created humans and deer and trees, and thus was a different substance from God. Our intellectual ancestor, Arius, argued that God made Jesus, and thus Jesus was not God. And that meant he denied the Trinity, that God, Jesus, and the Holy Ghost were actually the same being with different faces. So this was a huge crisis, and the church fathers, the Emperor Constantine, decided that it had to be resolved. And so all the church fathers gathered at Nicene to decide the truth once and for all. And it got incredibly nasty. Arius lost the debate and was condemned to death as a heretic and had to run for his life and lived in hiding for decades. Founded on reason, freedom, and tolerance, and a loving God, our Unitarian and our Universalist ancestors gave up creeds centuries ago. They believed new truth was always possible and never settled once and for all. This is still absolutely foundational to our tradition as Unitarian Universalists. Our Unitarian ancestors, the Puritans, did not organize themselves around a creed, but around covenants, agreements of how they would be together. They decided the purpose of a faith community was to learn together the truth about how to be loving, faithful people. This choice to organize themselves around learning truth instead of around proclaiming truth was revolutionary. It is still revolutionary about our faith. It made changes in belief and practice inevitable. Most faiths do change over time, but it can be very, very slow. It took centuries, but now Catholics can hear Mass in English instead of Latin. But still, every Sunday, believers profess in archaic wording the resolution of a debate from 1700 years ago that most modern believers don't understand or particularly care about. Our faith is not interested in ever having such statements. Still, there is absolutely a human need to name and clarify what we are up to. I certainly want this. I ask myself all the time, what is it we're doing here at WOOF? What is our purpose? Are we living our purpose faithfully? Clear articulation of what we're doing is much more possible. It's much more possible to do whatever we're trying to do if we can name it. And I believe this is a very worthy task. And so over the years, Unitarians, Universalists, and Unitarian Universalists have articulated statements about who we were in that very moment. And they almost always, even from the very beginning back in the 1700s, would always have this sentence that said, you know, we're not going to kick you out if you don't believe this. This is what we believe right now, but you're okay if we don't do that. We still have that. So we are a living tradition. That means we're open to change. So we go through this process of naming and articulating who we are over and over again. James Luther Adams, a Unitarian theologian from the mid-20th century, wrote that a living tradition is not bequeathed through the law of inheritance. It must be earned, not without dust and heat, and not without humbling grace. And that is the truth of it. Most modern Catholics, Christians, receive their creed through inheritance. You come and you're told, this is what we believe, and you can go if it's not what you believe. They are not asked to struggle and name in each generation a new center or purpose or set of beliefs. For Catholics, that was resolved 1,700 years ago. But we have to earn our living tradition in the dust and the heat as we wrestle with ourselves and with each other to name who we are in this moment and what we understand to be true right now. Scott read to us this morning one part of such a statement from the 19th century. For decades, around the turn of the 20th century, Unitarians proclaimed that they believed in the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, the leadership of Jesus, salvation through character, and progress of mankind onward and upward forever. In 1935, the Universalists declared that the bond of fellowship in this convention shall be common, a common purpose to do the will of God as Jesus revealed it and cooperate in establishing the kingdom for which he lived and died. These are just a few snippets of the resolutions and statements about who we are, who we've said we are over the centuries. And for those of you who are interested, at the back afterwards, you can pick up a sheet that has some of them printed on them. I mean, there's so many, but there's a few, and you can read those. So then in 1960, when the Unitarians and Universalists decided to merge, they once again had to enter the heat and dust and create a new purpose statement for the association. The struggle was not the council at Nicene. No one was condemned to death. But the merger also didn't happen either. It took over a year of conversation and debate. And finally, in an all-day, all-night negotiation session, and if you talk to ministers who were there, it was just agonizing, they came up with something enough people could live with. They discovered the humbling grace of compromise, of love, and I suspect exhaustion. So these are the original six principles, and they're on that sheet in the back, too, if you want to read them later. One, to strengthen one another in a free and disciplined search for truth as the foundation of our religious fellowship. Two, to cherish and spread the universal truths taught by the great prophets and teachers of humanity in every age and tradition, summarized in the Judeo-Christian heritage as love to God and love to man. Three, to affirm, defend, and promote the supreme worth of every human personality, the dignity of man, and the use of the democratic method in human relationships. Four, to implement our vision of one world by striving for a world community founded on ideals of brotherhood, justice, and peace. Five, to serve the needs of member churches and fellowships, to organize new churches and fellowships, and to extend and strengthen liberal religion. Six, to encourage cooperation with men of goodwill in every land. Major debate ensued over whether the language should be our Judeo-Christian heritage or the Judeo-Christian heritage. For the Universalists, who were still very connected with their Christianity, and the Unitarians, many who were firmly committed in their humanism, that one word felt like a validation or a disappearance of their faith. Any statement of who we are, even when it is not binding, is difficult, because that articulation is about identity and what fundamentally matters to us. And most of us care a lot about this. What was agreed on at merger was that Unitarian Universalism would continue to be a living, non-creedal faith. We would change as the world needed us to change, and we would never require someone to leave because they did not share our current articulation of faith and purpose, because it's always the people at the edge who bring in change. They believed this so strongly in 1961 that they wrote into the Unitarian Universalist Association bylaws that our purpose statement, which lives in Article 2, would need to be reviewed for possible change every 15 years. This was to ensure that we remained a living faith and that we would not accidentally become creedal by taking our temporary statement of purpose and turning it into a statement of belief. And change happened right on schedule. About 15 years later, Unitarian Universalists entered into the dust and heat once again. In the 1970s, many women noticed that they were in fact full human beings who were being oppressed by language, rules, laws, and culture. And they began to push back. More women became Unitarian Universalist ministers, entered leadership, and started to change the male dominant language that UU documents were filled with. And then they decided that patriarchal language in the 1961 principles had to go. Other UUs connected to the environmental movement in the 70s, or were learning about Eastern Asian faiths that were coming into the United States at that time, felt that the old principles did not connect us enough to the earth or wisdom traditions outside of Christianity. And they wanted change too. It took a while. Not everyone agreed that language such as man or brotherhood was sexist, or that Unitarian Universalism was a patriarchal faith, even though there were very few women ministers or women working in the association. It took a while for those truths to be widely accepted. After many years, many drafts, lots of conversation and arguments, the humbling grace came. In 1985, the General Assembly passed almost unanimously a new Article 2 with the principles and sources that are nearly identical to the ones that we have today. Since, and if you want to see those are also printed on that sheet of paper and they're also in our hymnals. Since 1985, we've entered that dust and heat of our living tradition on several occasions, and we've made some small changes to Article 2 over the years. Then, in 2009, after 2 years of study, a new draft Article 2 was submitted to General Assembly. And General Assembly is the place where we get together, UUs from congregations all over the United States and world get together to do the business of the Unitarian Universalist Association. It happens at the third week in June. The principles in this new draft remained almost intact. There was a few little changes, but the sources were changed pretty dramatically. Not so much in meaning, but they were moved into a paragraph form. The lack of poetic language upset many, including me, and those changes were voted down. But not by many, actually. It was only 13 votes off, so it was close. So, we have entered into the dust and heat again, struggling to name what our living faith is right now, right in this moment in 2023. There have been grumblings over the last years that the current principles no longer quite articulate who we are, or more importantly, who we need to be. This might surprise some of you, but I've actually never been much of a principles UU. I think they're fine, but I don't think they're particularly divining or helpful. All of my friends and family would affirm every principle, and most are not UUs. I've never been quite sure what the principles ask of us. We say we affirm them. That isn't really a commitment. It's more like an agreement. These are pretty good ideas. So my question's always, so what does that mean in terms of what we're doing together? I have really loved the first and last principle, and I often put it into a belief statement. If people ask me who Unitarian Universalists are, I always say we're committed to love, and we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person and respect for the interdependent web of all existence. And I do believe this with all my heart. And I find a responsible search for truth and meaning to be a practical statement of what we are trying to do together in a congregation. But I find the goal of world community and peace and liberty, with peace and liberty and justice for all, to be virtually meaningless. I mean, it's a really great aspiration, and who doesn't want that? But what do we do with it? It seems something that we wax poetic about at Christmas or the 4th of July, and it's not really something on which to ground a faith tradition. Currently, some UUs argue that the principles don't offer a big enough umbrella for all that we care about. They argue we should include all living beings, not just people, under our big ethical red umbrella, and that we need better ways to commit to anti-racism and anti-oppression work. You used our In a Conversation similar to the one in the 1970s about women, only about people of color. Few BIPOC people work as ministers in our faith or are leaders in our association or even attend UU congregations. Many who have tried have shared their grief and pain at how unwelcoming our congregations can be for people with diverse understandings, theology, and culture. If we are serious about including all kinds of people under our big umbrella, something has to change about how we are together. The current principles really haven't gotten us there. So in June of 2020, the UUA board charged an Article 2 study commission to thoroughly study and recommend changes. The board said in their charge, "The board believes that one core theological value shared widely among UUs is love. We therefore charge this commission to root its work in love as a principal guide in its work, attending particularly to the ways that we and our root traditions have understood and articulated love and how we have acted out of love." Over the past 2 years, the commission has gone through a process of meeting and talking and gathering ideas from thousands of UUs. They engaged in 40 back feedback sessions with 4,500 total participants. Their videos reached 7,800 viewers, and their 29 surveys generated almost 11,000 responses. 2 weeks ago, they released their final draft to the UUA board. Delegates at June's General Assembly will vote for it, either as it stands or with amendments. And if it passes, it will undergo a year of study with some changes still possible and then must be approved by a two-thirds of the delegates at the June 2024 General Assembly. We don't do anything quickly around here. So here's the thing about the new draft of Article 2. There are no principles. There are no sources. This could feel pretty shocking after having had a set of principles that define our faith for the last 62 years. We didn't actually have principles before that either, but for the past 62 years we have. And the new draft is actually grounded in love. You heard it read this morning, and this is a lovely graphic that the Article 2 Commission put out about it. It states our values as our foundation instead of overriding principles that guide us. The new version again begins. As Unitarian Universalists, we covenant congregation to congregation and through our association to support and assist one another in our ministries. We draw from our heritages of freedom, reason, hope, and courage, building on the foundation of love. Love is the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. We are accountable to one another for doing the work of living our shared values through the spiritual discipline of love. Inseparable from one another, these shared values are interdependence, equity, transformation, pluralism, generosity, and justice. Each shared value is given a short description that sounds much like our principles. Interdependence, we honor the interdependent web. Pluralism, we celebrate that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. Justice, we work to be diverse, beloved communities where all thrive. Transformation, we adapt to the changing world. Generosity, we cultivate a spirit of gratitude and hope. Equity, we declare that every person has the right to flourish with inherent dignity and worthiness. This is a really interesting comment. So there's this word worthiness that feels like kind of awkward. And so I was reading, you know, you ministers are all having a big conversation about these, obviously. And people are like, worthiness? Why not just worth and dignity? We've had that. Well, it turns out that Black people who've been working on this and in these conversations really dislike the word worth to describe human beings, which is so understandable. Like, I'd never really thought about that. So that's why we have that awkward language. And probably a lot of this awkward language has stories that you would hear. So the commission actually took a really radical turn, which is entirely like our current statement of purpose, which is they offer guidance on what it means to live out each value. And they ask Unitarian Universalists to covenant to live them. So, for example, under pluralism, they say, we covenant to learn from one another in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We embrace our differences and commonalities with love, curiosity, and respect. For transformation, they say, we covenant to collectively transform and grow spiritually and ethically. Openness to change is fundamental to our Unitarian and Universalist heritage, never complete and never perfect. So those are also written on that sheet of paper that I gave you, and they're also available online. So for many UUs, the first reading of new Article 2 feels like a solid brick no. It is so not the principles and sources which we've come to love, and more importantly, to identify as the meaning of our faith. It almost feels wrong. And while I'm not a principles UU, I am a sources UU, and I have to tell you that that's hard because they're not there. And part of the problem is we've made a mistake about how we talk about ourselves generally in religious education with our children and when in our sanctuaries. We create these statements, which are absolutely necessary so that we all know where we are in the moment, and then we become attached to them. Can you imagine if those Unitarians who for decades, I mean, this was like 40 or 50 years, proclaimed their faith that they believed in the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, the leadership of Jesus, salvation through character, and the progress of mankind onward and upward forever, and they came and they read our current principles, it seems quite probable that most of them would hate them. I mean, where's God? Where's Jesus? Where's brotherhood? You know, they probably wouldn't like them. We never attach, when we make these statements, the words, for now. Or, these are temporarily our principles until we come up with something new. We really don't say that. So we get attached. And this means that we really easily mislead ourselves about who we are, believing that we are that statement instead of a living tradition that changes regularly how we learn to be more to live better as loving, faithful people. The new version asks us to make promises that we will try our best to live our values. And we all know that when we commit to something, it changes us and it changes others. These new statements are asking us to more thoroughly commit to our faith. Those who worked on writing this change hope that this new articulation will allow us to create that umbrella that holds more and more people in its loving and sheltering embrace. We are a living tradition. Who we are in this moment was not given to us as inheritance to take or reject, but must be struggled for in the heat and the dust. And that is what we are doing right now. And I am inviting all of you into a conversation about what is at the center of Unitarian Universalism now. What is most important about who we are as a faith in this world, in this moment, in our bodies, in our hearts, in our souls? Who are we? And what is being asked of us? I am not asking you in any way to support this new draft of Article 2 or to just rally behind the current principles and sources, but to do something a little more critical and a little more difficult. which is to struggle in the heat and the dust to wrestle with what is most important about Unitarian Universalism right now, and to wrestle with your own faith. What are the values or principles or commitments that guide your life right now, and how do these connect with our larger faith? For me, I want Unitarian Universalism to be a large umbrella where people know that they are loved and they are forgiven, and that they have a light in their soul and are able to create more love so it spills out into the world, creating justice and peace for all of us. When I return from sabbatical, the Committee on Ministry and I will host gatherings where we can wrestle with these questions together in the heat and the dust, and hopefully some grace. And only after we've done that, I think, is it fair for us to ask, is this version of Article 2 serve us best? Is it the principles that still serve us best? Or is there something else, some way that we can transition the conversation in this moment? This is the deep, deep work of our faith, which is discerning with love what is true now and what we will do with that truth. Let us rise and sing Dancing Sarah's Circle. The words are on the screen. Leave in love, casting care and joy into the world, as is our true faith. We extinguish this frame, but not the vision and the compassion of our faith. May they stay with you until we meet again.
Carry your faith.